Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And SouthsideBroadcasting.podbean.com.
Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind for the population of today.
NSEA Protector, Commander Peter Quincy Taggart, Lieutenant Tawny Madison, Dr. Lazarus, and Tech Sergeant Chen. Never heard of them? Well, maybe you need to check out the latest edition of Resonance Rewind, in which we take a quest across the galaxy.
In the far reaches of the galaxy, a civilization is under siege.
We are all that is left.
They've searched the universe for a leader.
Stay tuned for scenes from next week's Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
He will save us.
What they got.
Never give up. And never surrender.
Were struggling TV actors.
You are our last hope.
Where's my limo?
Okie dokie.
And they're about to put on a command performance 8 million light years away.
We are actors, not astronauts.
You are our protectors.
That was a hell of a thing.
Now,
Laredo, take us out.
You gotta move to the right.
Would you sit parallel? Your ass down? You wanna drive this to...
Acting like heroes.
The whole thing was just a misunderstanding.
May not be enough.
They look like little children. Hi, little guy.
I'm done.
DreamWorks Pictures presents Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman. Galaxy Quest.
You're just gonna have to kill it.
Well, go for the mouth, the throat, his vulnerable spots.
It's a rock, it doesn't have any vulnerable spots.
Yes, well, historical documents. That's what they are, that's what they'll be. And Jessica Bertus has already said she's going to give it a good solid 9, which is a little bit of a preemptor. She may change it, of course, by the time she's had a chance to listen to this. And we've tacked her segments on to the end of this particular production. But quoting Jessica to start off with, seeing Tim Allen and Professor Snape, fictional character, in a Star Trek parody made it even more fun. And who doesn't love a good space movie? Apparently, Jessica's friend has been desperate for them to watch it for months, so it was good to see finally what all the hype was about. Kathy Manso, Galaxy Quest. One for yourself, or is it a case of too similar to GQ, Gentleman's Quarterly? And that's a different line entirely.
Well, I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. It was nice. I went on this journey, happy to. I liked that it was poking a lot of fun at sci-fi. That really got me, especially when it was calling out bad writing. So I mean, I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, but I enjoyed just watching all these actors that I've loved seeing in so many different things and seeing like the youngest version of Justin Long I've ever seen before. So good time.
Well, there we are. Nicely summarized. Of course, there is a line which says that Guy Fleegman, portrayed by Sam Rockwell, in many ways paved the way for his far superior incarnation of Zaphod Beeblebrox in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And we've already said how wonderful the fabulous Alan Rickman was as Marvin the Palarinide android there. But Jenny Bill, you don't like science fiction comedy. You hate it with a vengeance. So is this again a case of under sufferance? You actually stuck with this one?
Do you know, I was saying to my dad that that's why I say that every time we have some kind of comedy sci-fi. And when this film first came out, it didn't interest me because obviously I knew what it was about. And obviously, but I have seen it. I saw it a long time ago, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, what better film can there be? One that makes me cry with laughter and cry with sadness in the same movie. There's just absolutely 1,001 things about it that I absolutely love. I think it's just so spot on. It's like a sort of a tribute almost, really. Just all those silly little things, like when he does the rolls, which is like Kirk used to do. And by a mile, my favourite line was when they're on that planet with the little blue kids with the teeth, and Sigourney Weaver says, quick, let's go before they kill Guy. Never mind kill us. It's just like it's presumed that he's going to be killed because he's like the number six red shirt that always dies first. So it's just so many really hilarious in jokes, and the acting is fabulous. And you know, it's a great story, and it's I just think it's a great package. So that's probably surprised you.
Well, you know, again, a surprise is the natural thing of things. And indeed, Kathy, you can call out to their face Stephen and Robin for refusing to defend either Blake 7 or indeed the equally hilarious Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Stephen, over to yourself.
Don't you worry. Don't you worry. I'm glad they decided to show up. Hey, gentlemen, what's up? How are you? Welcome back. It's been a while.
Kathy Manso. Just bring it.
Yeah.
So Galaxy Quest, Stephen.
I absolutely loved it. I think to start with, I'd seen Galaxy Quest before Star Trek, so I saw it more as a straightforward comedy the first time I saw it. Whereas having seen Star Trek, I really enjoyed it more. But what really got me was seeing like the sci-fi conventions and that kind of thing in it, how spot on it is. It's the same stage, it's the same seating, it's the same everything. But another thing that I noticed that I hadn't picked up on before was that Simon Bisley was the concept artist up for it, who's done things like Judge Dredd, he's done Lobo. But I just really enjoyed the movie.
I mean, I enjoyed it first time round, but I must admit this is one of those rare occasions where I have to say it has got less impressive over the years, but so it goes. Robin.
Sorry, what did you just say?
I've actually lowered this. This is one of those rare occasions where actually my original mark, where I used to use the line, it's like a documentary for sci-fi conventions. Actually, now I don't think it's necessarily survived the test of time quite as much as perhaps you'd like to think.
I will take this opportunity to apologise to our listeners for Alex's obvious heresy here. I don't know. I think the British weather might have got to him. Now then, what I thought of this, it's like Steve, it's absolutely pinpoint accurate. I would take issue with it being called a comedy. To me, it's not a comedy. It's more of a parody. And it parodies Star Trek and its tropes so effectively that at the time that it was made, the producers felt that maybe they were going a little bit too close to Star Trek. So if you've noticed, the NESA Protector,
not the Enterprise,
not the Enterprise, NTE 3120, which I thought is just, that's just delightful. But not only do you have them parodying Star Trek and its tropes, you also have them parody very, very effectively some of the lead actors from Star Trek and their attitudes towards the characters they played. I mean, like Alan Rickman. I was almost an actor once. It shows the same, albeit in a comical way, the same kind of bitterness that Leonard Nimoy in the mid-70s had for Spock when he realized how typecast he had been. And of course, you have also Tim Allen being a little bit terse with some of the fans, as William Get a Life Shatner has been over the years. Now, moving on from there, I don't know about Jenny and Kathy, but certainly myself, Steve, and you, Alex, have been to a fair few conventions over the years. And we have seen the conventions from both sides of the curtain, as it were. And it's just, as Steve said, absolutely pinpoint accurate. I mean, little backstage bits, you see. We have been there. We have been standing at the wings, ready to go on. We have, I certainly have, had a microphone in my hand and tried to whip up some enthusiasm for an actor who was behind a ton of makeup or a latex suit that the audience have never heard of and never will again. We've also introduced actors who have had their moment in the spotlight and, you know, they've faded into obscurity, but this is their one little piece of glory that they have left. I actually felt Tim Allen's kind of crushing disappointment when he was in the toilet cubicle hearing people say how pathetic he was, because I've been there. I've heard people say sort of, wow,
nobody said how pathetic you've been. Kathy might have called you out a couple of times ago, but you know,
not now. I mean, what do these people expect? So yeah, to me it worked on every conceivable level. It kind of makes the Orville look like an almost but not quite successor to Star Trek. I would say that this is a far more accurate depiction of both fandom in general, fandom at conventions where people take the characters absolutely seriously, you know, sort of, well, do you remember in episode 13 of season 2 when you did this? What was going through? Well, he was reading from a script, you know? It just works.
Kathy, in a few weeks' time, you and myself and possibly Chloe will be actually attending the Sci-Fi Scarborough event. Is this something that you're looking forward to, given the likelihood of us possibly not meeting any Thermians there?
Okay, first of all, yes. Second of all, I'm not going to just look over the comment that you said that, oh, now that I've watched this so many times, I don't have the same love for it. So how many times did it take you, Alex, to watch this film for you to decide that it's not as good as you once thought?
Just before Alex answers, can I just jump in? Based on what you've just said, Kathy, we can be friends again.
Hold on. I was bringing the drama today for you, Robin and Steven Pierce. Just coming in when you feel like it, only to comment on movies that you like. It's kind of rude. I want to hear your honest opinions of the movies you don't like. I think it was kind of rude that you've missed a few weeks because you're like, not my thing. Tell
okay,
us why.
We'll do
it's
that
not your
off
thing.
Air because Alex wouldn't like the language.
Yeah, he really wouldn't.
I think it's a perfect example of you employing the Freedom of Speech Act, so beloved to the United States of America. I'm not saying it's a bad movie.
Well, I think it's a TikTok. Don't you worry. I think the people will be on my side.
I would agree. I'd agree. I think in so many ways, because nobody ever really acknowledges the huge debt that Galaxy Quest owes to a piece of fan fiction in which William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy effectively had a transporter instance and actually emerged on the USS Enterprise, which goes back to a Star Trek New Voyages from around about 1976, 1977. And also, I think I would have loved to have seen how Harold Ramis would have actually handled the whole piece. I think Dean Pariseau, as the director, did some fine stuff. Robert Gordon obviously built it up in terms of space. This was clearly Steven Spielberg and David Geffen and Jeffrey Katzenberg's real crapshoot to actually ensure that they could actually get something going through the whole system. And it actually did work, and it was a fun movie of its time. Somehow, I think some 20-odd years later, maybe because obviously the proposed sequel with Alan Rickman sadly will no longer ever happen now because he has passed away, I can appreciate that it's loved, it's appreciated. But overall, I think Douglas Adams did parody so much better in Hitchhiker's Guide than what we see here, which was an American version of Hitchhiker's Guide, despite the fact that you've got you know, some nice nods in the direction of indeed the fandom scenario and such like. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I wouldn't have put it on the list of things to be considered if it was a bad movie. I'm just thinking it's maybe not as wonderful as perhaps people would actually say or claim it is.
I think it's a fair position to have, but like, let's not get bamboozled by all your fancy words you just said, Alex. I heard a personal attack on the American casting here, and I'm sorry. When you have a team like this, they're making movie magic, you know? There's a reason they're still being called. I mean, Monk even made this. Monk.
Yeah, true, absolutely. As of course, tech officer Fred Kwan, of course, Tony Shalhoub, very much to the fore there, and I think a standout.
Also, Rainn Wilson in the cast as one of the Thermians. I'm before we go into rating this particular movie, I'm going to take the unprecedented step of rating Alex Lefchip's performance tonight as a 5. You're going to have to work hard to get a 6 tonight, Alex.
Yes, that's a wonderful meta-narrative that you're actually alluding to, which sadly is beyond the scope of this particular universe, but
Fourth
in another dimension.
Be damned.
This universe or this Zoom call?
I think universe. So what in particular, Jenny, do you find appealing about Galaxy Quest, which you don't find appealing about comedy when it's being utilised in other science fiction examples, example being, of course, Teen Titans now and such like?
I think that the comic timing was very good. I also, there was a lot of straight acting and there were some sad moments as well, which means that it wasn't just a whole film that was kind of a comedy or a slapstick or just meant to be humour. It was, as I think Robin said, it wasn't really a comedy. It's more of a sort of a, to me, it's like a sort of a tribute sort of, parody of Star Trek. So it was like you had a lot of straight moments and you had a lot of, sort of like sad moments. But then I think the humor, to me, the timing was really good, but also just the little things. I mean, I because I know so much about Star Trek, I know so many of the things that come from Star Trek or from, like Robin was talking about, the actors' personal lives, which they managed to put across as either part of the character or part of the person that was playing the character in the film and utilize all those things. So for me, obviously, it had a special meaning because I'm such a big Star Trek fan. And yeah, I do think the acting was very good. I think the whole crew worked together, the whole team of actors worked together really, really well. The casting was really well done. I'm going to score Blake 7 while we're doing scores. I'm going to give it about minus 150. There you go.
Well, there we are. A little interesting sign of that. And you're going to score Blake 7 and give it minus 150, says Jenny Bill.
Yeah, I'm being generous.
There we are. One job and that's all she's going to do. God damn it. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a bit more diversity, I think, in terms of the actual sequence we get there. That's another reason why, for me, this doesn't sort of quite score as highly as perhaps it might. And I think we actually see...
What do you mean diversity? What do you mean here?
I think in terms of the characters that we actually see, I mean, we don't really get any... I mean, okay, it is supposed to be the crew of the Enterprise, but, you know, Nichelle Nichols, who presumably...
They were parodying a show from the 60s and 70s when diversity wasn't a thing, which is why Sigourney Weaver was playing somebody whose only job was to repeat what the computer had just said. They were mocking that trope. So I think that its very essence was kind of mocking the lack of diversity.
Which is exactly what Star Trek was never guilty of. Because the whole essence of Star Trek...
Because diversity wasn't a thing back then. You can't accuse something of not adhering to something that wasn't so hot a topic.
Unfortunately, Robin, the argument collapses.
But, hang on, you would interrupt...
The argument collapses primarily because we have a situation in which infinite diversity in infinite combinations is at the heart of the entire Star Trek ethos. So the notion that there was no diversity is in itself a false premise. I shall now unmute you. No, he's still muted. Anyway, moving on.
No, hang on a second. You're applying today's standards to Star Trek, and thereby to this, which was parodying it, which is going to fall flat on its hindquarters. Surely.
No, because, again, as I said, the infinite diversity aspect continues. Stephen, let's turn to your good self. You saw this before you saw Star Trek. And in terms of the actual sort of, you know, fondness of the whole thing, clearly Thermians, we've seen... I mean, one companion text which is well worth watching is the documentary on the making of Galaxy Quest, which goes into the whole process of how they came up with it, how they developed it, and so on and so forth. Is it something which you think, again, has sufficient standing to have a sequel, a series, etc., or is it a case of, well, it just stands alone?
I think they could have actually gone on and done an event series of this. And what I'd have loved to see them do is apply Galaxy Quest, have it based on original Star Trek, but maybe have done a sequel but based it on Next Generation and see how it goes on from there. I think that would have worked really well.
Which is pretty much what Will Wheaton actually said when he was actually interviewed. And it's interesting that none of the original Star Trek cast were actually asked for their comments, but the Next Generation cast were, in terms of the sequence. And you had Brent Spiner saying this is the movie that he wanted to make. Brent Spiner went on record as saying that this should have been the Star Trek Next Generation ideal movie that they were looking for. So, again, an interesting sort of range in terms of that. I'm really not sure in terms of the original cast what they would have actually made of it. And I haven't actually tracked down any real comments that they made about Galaxy Quest itself. I think, you know, certainly if you're looking at seeing the character of... Jason Nesmith, played by Tim Allen, as the William Shatner reference, etc. I think again, William Shatner was probably quite hurt, as indeed he said he was in many of his texts about the way that the cast viewed him. However, let's move on. Kathy, favorite characters.
Favorite characters. I mean, it's hard because everyone really played their roles. They really embraced their role. I think that's the right way to say it. They really took on their character. And, you know, obviously I did compare it a lot to Star Trek because that's kind of the whole point. But I was taking it a little bit more bigger picture and comparing it to a lot of sci-fi films, which I know would probably have to incorporate what Star Trek would consider. So I didn't take it as specific as you guys were mentioning earlier, which is why I'm totally cool with Robin's analogies. Sorry, Alex, I just disagree. Anyway, to go with the favorite character, I love Alan Rickman. I love the fact that he is a British character playing a British character in a spaceship. Like, it's amazing. I love his reference being like, I was King Richard. things, moments of reflection. Like, and he's himself without being himself. So I did enjoy him immensely. I also just enjoy Sam Rockwell's character, but I'm a sucker for Sam Rockwell. I just like that he really embraced the idea of being like, I'm the extra. I'm the one that can be lost. And even the aliens were interesting to kind of follow on. And exactly as Jenny was saying, I did not know I was going to be so emotionally involved. Like when the alien was being tortured and tormented, I gasped. I wasn't ready to be so committed to it, like to think that there could be a death without knowing that I would care so much for the character. But yeah, I'm going to stick with Alan Rickman. Yeah, that's my favorite.
We talked about, obviously, the way fans are actually portrayed in this. And again, I think in some instances, maybe fans have got other issues as well with respect to that, because fan is short for fanatic. I think the cliche, and it is a cliche now, that you go to a particular episode and work through that. Justin Long portraying Brandon, in many ways analogous to Stephen Pierce doing the whole. So, I mean, your thoughts, Stephen, on the way in which Justin Long would have actually channeled the sort of notion of the fandom. And of course, you know, he knew it was real. He knew it was real all along.
See, I really liked that. And one of the things he did that I really enjoyed was, and I've seen it in conventions, when he goes up to the Tim Allen character with all the layouts for the ship, he wants to know what's going on. And of course, you know, he's got no idea, because all he had was a script and none of this existed, but he was so convinced that it was all real. It is really well done.
Yes, I'm not sure how many of those I've actually sort of encountered, but still. Jenny, what about yourself? Or are you one of those fans who actually believes that these things are real?
No, I don't believe that they're real. But that was another thing about the film that really amused me, where because they're actors and they know nothing about the ship, whereas the fans know everything about the technology, because that's what fans kind of do.
It's the same line as basically people who believe actors in soap operas are actually genuine soap opera people, and they actually get annoyed when they actually do nasty things, so they write offensive letters to them, perhaps.
I think since I was about 6 years old, I realised that they weren't real and that it was only actors. But before that, I used to think people really got killed on telly.
Okay, favourite character?
My favourite character. I like both of the female characters. I thought Sigourney Weaver was, her timing, I thought she was fantastic. I thought her timing was excellent, and the lines that she delivered, she delivered them perfectly. So I'll have to go for her character.
I'm surprised Robin hasn't referred to the Thunderbirds-esque walk that obviously was developed by the Thermians, because clearly that was very much to the fore then, but maybe it'll be a tough call when we come around to Joe 90 once again in a few weeks' time. Robin, any favourite characters for yourself?
Absolutely. I think that Tim Allen, you know, who was at that point known as you know, the voice of Buzz Lightyear, so there was that recognition factor there, did an excellent job of parodying both Captain Kirk and William Shatner. Mm. But really, really, it has to go all out to me for Alan Rickman as Alexander Bain, you know, Dr. Lazarus. Having read Nimoy's I Am Not Spock back in the 70s, he channeled Nimoy's bitterness at that point so well. I just love the fact that he included as much of it in, and he just stole the show for me, minimally, from Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver, who, you know, after her turn as Ripley, play this kind of character so well, having been one of sci-fi movies' strongest character, go to, you know, basically a token character, if you like. It was just so well done. But definitely Alan Rickman.
I'm personally going for Missy Pyle as Laliari, because I feel that anybody who can actually sort of work our way through the translator difficulties of the Thermians has to be sort of taken with great seriousness. Stephen, did we get your favourite character?
No, my favourite character, I'd have to agree, is Alan Rickman as Dr. Lazarus. Just the way he delivered his lines, and he was, the fact that he would not say the line no matter how much they wanted him to say it. It's really...
And we've avoided saying it on this particular production again for that reason, precisely. because again, it's completely out of kilter with any kind of real. Where is the connection with respect to that and the original series? None whatsoever, unless you're actually looking at aspects of Klingonese which weren't really being developed there.
Well, I think one thing is maybe I saw that By God, There's Hammer was a bit like Live Long and Prosper. Yeah.
Yeah,
I saw a bit like Live Long and Prosper, the kind of that similarity.
Except it's an oath as opposed to a greeting or a salutation. But anyway, interesting in terms of the lineup here. I wonder if people will be scoring accordingly. Jenny, let's go to you first. What's your score out of 10 for this one?
10.
There you go. Kathy Manso.
I don't. 9.5, because I just don't give 10. I don't. I loved it. I enjoyed it. Would watch it again. But I gotta give that little wiggle room for something that really put 10 for me.
Like Navalny, of course. Another movie that Robin and Stephen just didn't engage with. Stephen.
I'm waiting for my time.
I've got to agree with Jenny. It's a 10.
Uh-huh. Robin?
Hands down, I don't like giving them, but it's a 10.
Yeah, I have to stick with an 8, all things considered. It might have at one stage been a 9. It's never been a 10 for me at any stage. Good movie, fine movie, well worth accessing, but I do feel that perhaps rose-coloured spectacles are seeing the way in which we're working through this. However, next week, of course, before we actually speak again to Jessica and find out what her insight in terms of favourite character happens to be, we find that the world gets lovelier and lovelier with received pronunciation very much to the fore, with the joys of H.G. Wells and Things to Come, and a whole range of predicting things there back from the world of 1936. Kathy, you've got a few moments left now. Would you like to actually raise those issues that we'd obviously bounced around in social media because we know how much Mark Zuckerberg likes Facebook people to be controversial?
Oh, don't I? Yes, I have. I'll keep it short. You know, we only have so much time. Don't wanna take it up. But Stephen, Robin, our friendship can continue when you come back with a show or film that we watch that we have complete opposite opinions on, and we can argue it fairly on an open platform like Zoom to later be broadcasted later. Today was nice because we agreed, but what about the other weeks where we could have disagreed? And that's really what we're selling here.
Okay, Blake 7. Conceptually, I should have liked it when it was first shown. I watched it and I thought it was typical, cheap, ill-produced, BBC effluence, typical of its time.
And what about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I've never taken to it. I've read the book. I saw the BBC series. I will not be rereading the book. And I don't currently, nor will I ever, own the BBC series in any format.
So wait, when was the last time you watched it?
I'm not a big fan of the BBC or their sci-fi output, because certainly in the late 70s and through the 80s, it all looked samey. They filmed on the same industrial estate, and it was the same sandpit at the back end of nowhere.
Yeah, I tried to watch those. I couldn't get 5 minutes without just switching them off. The other one I can't stand at all is Red Dwarf.
Oh, no, I can't at all.
No.
You're doing Red Dwarf at any point. Don't be looking for us.
No.
Similarly,
no.
If you're thinking of doing the film version of Dune, I won't be here.
And yet, curiously, when Robin has been faced with the opportunity to actually take something on board for the first time, like Superman and Lois, he's found it quite amusing and quite sensible.
Yeah,
never
mind. These are things that I have tried and have vehemently disliked.
To be fair,
I don't condemn anything without watching it, but I've tried these. I just do not like them. They appeal to me on no level whatsoever. I came to Superman and Lois as a new viewer, not expecting very much. Really loved it. Currently working my way through the first season.
No, and I think your opinions are fair. They're valid. I appreciate them. But, you know, difference between you and Steven, Robin, is Steven gave it a shot for the first 5 minutes. He put in a little work, and he was like,
but then I gave up.
Which, that's fair. I accept that. You turned it on at least. But I'm curious, Robin, when was the last time you watched Guardians of the Galaxy?
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, when did you watch it last? If not in the last 2 weeks.
The last time I watched Guardians of the Galaxy was...
Oh, sorry, wrong word. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. My bad.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the TV series was shown in the early 80s, and I watched all 6 episodes. Blake 7, I watched it on and off.
No, the film.
I missed several seasons, but I tried to watch all the last season, but just could not take to it.
And that is fair, but the film, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, if I haven't liked the TV series or the book, I have no logical reason to watch the film.
Okay, Robin, you're telling me, as an adult, you're giving me the excuse of, well, I never actually tried it, but, you know, since I don't like vegetables, and I assume this is a vegetable, I'm not going to like it. Robin.
Well, Kathy, I mean, that basically wraps the thing up perfectly well. In fact, I'm not even going to give Robin right a reply, because we'll simply say those magical words certainly to Jenny Bill, Stephen Pierce, Robin Pierce, and Kathy Mance. So keep on resonating. We'll be right back. Well, as promised, we've already revealed her score for The Joys of Galaxy Quest, but given the slight controversy, and I emphasize slight controversy because I appreciate that I am the curmudgeonly one on this particular one, giving it a measly 8 out of 10, as opposed to the 10s that were awarded by Jenny, Stephen and Robin. But, you know, I mean, even Kathy could only go 9.5, and Jessica would say we went 9. I'm happy to discuss that in more length, but let's find out, Jessica, a little bit more detail. As you said, when you've got Professor Snape, a.k.a. Alan Rickman, and, of course, the wondrous world of Sigourney Weaver and Tim Allen as well, what's not to appreciate? And, of course, you've got Monk. And indeed, you're right. Again, a good movie, but for me, one which over the years has possibly lost a little of its luster. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, Jessica, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that... So I actually have a friend here who's been like wanting everyone to watch this movie for months. So I had this movie very hyped up before I even watched it. And I think it is one of the most I don't think I have ever seen a parody that's also seems so fond of its source material. But I thought the main part that was so entertaining was the cast, of course, seeing all these actors coming together. And I think part of what I liked too is how it kind of especially highlighted the impact of audiences and how a lot of the fans who were brushed off by the actors ended up becoming the people who were helpful. So I thought that was really nice, especially because Star Trek is a show where I feel like the fans are so involved in the show and are part of why it's continued for so long. So I feel like it makes sense to work with Star Trek. I feel like Star Trek is a show that you have to get involved in the fan base with. But I was so surprised that I enjoyed it. I don't usually enjoy spoofs or anything like that, but it was just so fun. And I think my favorite part is how Alan Rickman just wore his makeup prosthetics. I forgot he was human at some point. Just like he is just this alien thing.
He is Dr. Lazarus.
Yeah, he has become his character completely. But it was just so fun from the beaming up scene. That was one of my favorites. I think this movie just has so much charm. But I'm curious kind of how it seems from the perspective of someone who's a Star Trek fan and who really, really knows Star Trek.
Well, I mean, as I said last night, even though Robin seemed to be most upset and even more upset when we called him out, or Kathy called him out for not actually sitting in and watching Blake 7 on the basis of he's never watched it since he first started and he hates it ever since. And even worse, not actually watching the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie because he hated the book and the TV series. So, you know, again, on that side of things, and Jenny was into minus 1,000, as you could hear back on the programme for the Blake 7, so she was never going to go for that. And I just think it was interesting that, yeah, I like the film. I think it's got a lot of very good positive things around it. The reason it's kind of faded slightly with me over time is I think it kind of looks to really straddle both Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation. And most people say, oh, it's all down to the original series. It's all focusing on the original series. I don't think it is. I think actually in terms of the young, youthful navigator that we actually have, of course, Laredo, who we're first introduced to basically as a child actor on the show, not too dissimilar to Will Wheaton, of course, in Star Trek: The Next Generation. But he then obviously grows up and his character sort of matures as well from that perspective, played by Tarryl Mitchell, of course, character being Tommy Weber. And somehow I felt that, you know, there were nods here in the direction which were, yeah, appropriate for Next Generation. And of course, the dig at William Shatner and his relationships with the crew, or alleged relationships with Nichelle Nichols and so on. Those were the sort of areas that, for me, I think with the passage of time, whereas they seemed to hit quite strongly at the time, back at the start of this century, to the extent that I actually almost said this was more a drama documentary as opposed to anything else, I sometimes feel it. So it's doesn't quite resonate as solidly now as it used to, because I think most fans actually these days are a bit more sophisticated. They're a bit more focused in terms of knowing the difference between their fictional characters being performers and indeed, you know, paid impersonators and lines of that, or professional sort of folk from that point of view, and the narrative that they're saying. Of course, there is a meta narrative which we haven't talked about, which is maybe in some universe these words are somebody else's fiction, and indeed Galaxy Quest is completely real and true and valid because of the multiverse theory. And we didn't actually address that because I felt that would be too much. Our colleagues would have found that a bit too much to actually work through. Nevertheless, as I say, a very good movie, but not for me one of those high. It's an 8 out of 10 movie for me, as opposed to a sort of movie high. I mean, I might nudge it up slightly more. And besides, I felt possibly a bit of a loyalty to the movie version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which of course features Alan Rickman as the voice of Marvin, the paranoid android, and of course features Sam Rockwell as Zaphod Beeblebrox. Sam, of course, playing the crewman in this particular routine. So I feel that actually, I think all things considered, this merits an 8. So there we are, fully explained that whole system, despite the fact that, as I say, it's the first time I've ever had to mute Robin Pierce on the program ever. It was getting heated, shall we say, in the first part. So there we are. It's all good, and I think we've sort of broken the thing down effectively now. So let's talk characters, because I mean, are you sticking with Alan Rickman as Alexander Dane, or are you going to go? I mean, I've said earlier I'll stick with Missy Pyle as Laliari, because I think the way she managed to master the Thunderbirds puppet walk, together, of course, with Enrico Colantoni as Malthazar, I think was very effective. And I think the Thermians, their childlike innocence and their approach to the whole thing were certainly key to the enjoyment of this particular narrative.
I think it's so hard because they all were so entertaining. I think something that I really liked was like the dry humor that a lot of the characters had. That was like one key point that I loved about Alan Rickman's character. But then also Tim Allen is an actor who like I associate so much with my childhood as Santa Claus in the Disney movies that it's so hard for me to not adore him in roles. But I think the Thermian who had, I can't remember his name, he had like the super dry humor. Like when the alien was turned inside out and it just exploded when he was like, and it exploded. I think that line was one of the funniest. So I think him, just because he kept making me laugh. And I don't think his character was like over the top. It was because he was so neutral that it was so funny.
Yeah, absolutely. And nobody's obviously put in a plug for Saris, of course, as the evil villain who obviously references the character of Khan and others within the original series, including, of course, the heading through the minefield, which is a nod in the direction of the Mutara Nebula. So lots of other areas there. We didn't speak about David Newman's music, of course. We've been featuring his music throughout this particular edition of Resonance Rewind. Thoughts on the music, Jessica? Did you feel it added to the space opera feel of the whole experience?
I did. I think you can't have a Star Trek or really so many shows that center around space, I feel like, have such iconic soundtracks. So I feel like you couldn't have this movie work if it didn't have good music. I think when they were doing like the battle and flying, I think that song was like really fun because it echoed how epic some of the scenes in Star Trek feel. So I think the soundtrack was actually really great.
Well, there we are. It certainly seems to have got a resounding thumbs up, but the legacy and the reverberations of the Resonance Rewind, or some of the Resonance Rewind team sort of drilling down on Blake Seven and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy will clearly sort of have its own manifestations. And don't get me started on Navalny and the reason that they didn't watch that. That's another line entirely. Don't forget, next week for Resonance Rewind, we are traveling back in time from the current 2023 to 1936, which is actually looking ahead to 2036 in the H.G. Wells written and Alexander Korda produced epic that apparently took 3 years to actually make, cast of thousands, and features the fantastic line, "I think things get lovelier and lovelier." Or do they? It's Resonance Rewind with things to come next week. Same time, same channel.
interesting, exciting, and anxious time.
Don't be too sure of progress.
Well, what's going to stop progress nowadays?
War.
There is war and rumor of war.
The unknown aircraft passed over Sea Beach and dropped bombs.
See me. They've got guts. They can do something still. We'll fight them. We'll fight them. You've still got hostages?
I've read of the Mediterranean and Greece and Egypt and India. Oh, I can read a lot of those old books. I'm not like most of the younger people here. I learned quite a lot before education stopped and schools closed down. I want to see the world.
If I had my way, you could fly to all that in a couple of hours.
If you were free. And if I was free.
Will this be humanity tomorrow? And the years after? What then?
I don't believe my boy could have thought of this. The two of them must have got together.
They'll come back together. This time there's no attempt to land on the moon.
When is this great experiment been made? How much longer have we got before they go?
When the space gun is ready.
Sometime this year, do you mean?
Soon.
Well, they're rioting. It's barbarism come back again.
If they smash up that infernal gun, then honor is satisfied and you needn't go.
They won't smash the gun.
AD. You are catapulted through the centuries, whirled into the great unknown, into an era of glass cities towering to the sun, and a gigantic space gun rocketing passengers to the moon.
Is man never to rest, never to be free? Make the space gun the symbol of all that drives us and destroy it!